How would you like to discover the power of strategic influence and the 10 success factors of highly influential leaders? Gary Laney will tell us all about that, and he's the CEO of Success Masters, author, serial entrepreneur of 20 businesses. Industries include business networking, online media, e-commerce, intellectual property. He's a dynamic speaker and has been recognized as a top presenter, motivating tens of thousands of entrepreneurs. So, Gary, tell us about the 10 success factors of highly influential leaders.
Welcome to Awakened Titans Podcast with Lily Patrescu. Mind-blowing conversations with influential business titans sharing how you can manifest abundance, love, joy, success through quantum awakening, quantum manifestation, quantum healing, quantum miracles, exponential business growth, and innovative products and services.
Wow, let's just jump into that. So this is the name of my book is called The Power of Strategic Influence, The 10 Success Factors of Highly Influential Leaders. And do you want some background a little bit to why I wrote the book? What would you like me to talk about?
So tell us first, what are the 10 success factors of highly influential leaders? And then you can tell us some background.
So I'm going to back up a little bit because the 10 success factors are embedded within what I call the six spheres of strategic influence. And if you've heard of Stephen Covey, Stephen R. Covey, who wrote The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, he had a huge amount of influence on me in my younger years, my 20s, when I was becoming a manager, then a director, and then a VP of sales. So I had an opportunity to be with him about 10 years before he actually wrote and published his book and became famous. And so though my book doesn't resemble his book, there's a lot of influence. You could probably see traces of it as you did in my book. So I'll just give you quickly the six spheres, and I can break those down so you can understand what the success factors are all about. So the spheres begin with what I call perspective. Perspective is understanding, and I'll give these to you as I go along. So a perspective is not a success factor. It's the overarching idea of what you think you want to do. It's what you're thinking about and where you want to go, the mission, the vision, the things that go with that. Stephen Covey and his habits talk about, begin with the end in mind. So again, I'm not going to use his 6 habits, but I just want you to know that there's some things that resemble it. So within that perspective, all of us have to begin with what I call counting the cost, or understanding that you can survive the consequences of what you're getting into. We all have the capability of doing that, but it's very important to be able to commit to that up front so that you don't get into it and then say, oh, I didn't want to do this. Oh, I'm not really committed. So at the beginning, let's say, okay, we can have a survival mindset and we can be very successful, but we have to know that it's going to be a road of arduous work and commitment. And it's just a point, and then I'll get into the success factors, is that along the journey, we have to decide and agree that people have to be involved. We can't be, an island unto ourselves. We have to know that it takes many people to comprise and develop something very, very good in your life. Even though you might be the expert in so many different ways, you have to know that developing a network that is influential, that can help you along the way and you them, is very, very important to this whole journey about strategic influence. That makes sense? Okay, so then I'm going to get into the success factors. So sphere number one is perspective. Sphere number two is accountability. So what is accountability? Here's the first two success factors. Accountability means that I'm going to take personal responsibility for the things that happen in my life. Now back to that survival mindset. Something happens along the way. Rather than blame and victimize, I'm going to say, okay, I can take personal responsibility for the outcome or the way I respond to things that happen in my life. I may not be causing everything that happens that is obstructive or that is challenging, but I certainly have the ability to decide for myself that I can take ownership for my situation so that it doesn't disturb me, it doesn't stop me, it doesn't make me victimize again. So that's success factor one. The next one is that you have to become self-reliant. Now, this is a tricky question because a lot of people say, well, can you become self-reliant? Because self-reliant in its true definition means I can do everything by myself. But what it really means in world terms, in business, in relationships, is that I know that I require the ability to network, and to work along outside other people that have other expertise. And we combine our expertise to create something that's wonderful, something that's fantastic. So to me, self-reliance really means that I have the ability to know how to reach out and access the resource, the influence, the things that will help me to be successful. So that's success. That's sphere number two, accountability, and success factors one and two. And I'm going to use a guidance factor here. I have a little booklet that comes with my books if you ask for it. That's kind of a planner that helps you understand why you're getting into this journey, how you stay on track, and what and how to progress with it. And in it, really quickly, on the back side, it tells you what the 10 success factors are. So I'm going to just continue. So sphere number three is relationships. So as I become accountable, as I can become responsible, and people know me for that, they're going to think, wow, I'd like to access him or her and use their expertise in some way. And so we begin to form a relationship. I don't know about you, but I'm always looking for ways to connect with new people. It doesn't mean that I expect to have a fabulous or constructive relationship with every person I meet or connect with. It just means that I'm looking for good people that fit a profile that might help me and me, them, you know, further our journey to success. So I'm looking for those special opportunities where, okay, I am going to develop in a relationship connections of influence. Influence that can help me and me, them. And then the fourth part, of the success factors, success factor four, is that we need to form trusted partnerships. So yes, we're developing this sphere of influence with trusted people. And within that, hopefully some of those will be special. They'll bubble to the top, and we will form trusted partnerships that we can use in the future. That'll be much more deeper as far as a relationship go, meaningful, long-term, and strategic to us. So that's number four. Let's go to sphere number four now, and that's called leadership. So it's a progressive track. Everything I'm telling you is a step-by-step process. It's how we get from A to B to C to Z. But it starts out with a perspective, goes to having accountability, then we're developing relationships, which then will allow us, as we become more reputable, as we become more experienced, to become what people would call a leader. A leader can be an assumed leader where you step in and you try to help solve problems for anyone in your community, or it can be in your business where you actually are labeled as a leader and you have authority, but the authority must be used in a way that's constructive for everyone. So the success factors that come with leadership are twofold. One is to assume the role of leadership. So let's say I'm given a title. I've been advanced in my capacity in the company I'm working for, and I start to lay down my authority without really understanding what that authority means and what the leadership role is, so that I can inspire people, so that I can get people to want to listen to what I say and follow my direction. Of course, along the way, I'm going to be inclusive. I'm going to help people understand what I'm trying to accomplish, and I'm going to help them from an article I just wrote recently called Generosity Leadership. Means I'm going to help people shine. As a leader, my real responsibility is to help them to succeed, to help them bring the company forward and to accomplish things that we can never do on our own. So I'm going to stand in the back. I'm going to lead from behind. When I need to, when there's a challenge, I'm going to step in and I'm going to help solve that. Then I'm going to step back and let people continue to progress, to achieve, and to bring our success upward. So that is success factor five. Number six is to prepare for the ultimate journey. So I'm a leader now. And wow, if I'm going to do something, my dad used to say, if you're going to do it, then do it right. You know, if there's no meaning to doing something, if you don't think you're going to have a positive outcome, or at least that's your objective, your commitment, and your mindset. So that's leadership. Here we are. We're ready for leadership. Now I'm going to go into sphere number five, which is called opportunity. So a leader who has had experience, who has a reputation, who people trust, who can be accountable and has a perspective of this journey we're going on to have success all along the way, helping other people succeed. That's what I do as a leader. So there's two things as a leader, and these are success factors seven and eight. We're getting close to the end here. Success factor seven is to assess your personal driving forces. So I was taught when I was younger, when I got involved in something, they'd ask me the question, what's your purpose? What are you trying to do here? You know, what is the objective of why you got involved? Do Do you just willy-nilly just accept things just because somebody says you should do this? Please get involved with us. Or do you step back and say, well, before I get involved, I need to understand, can I make a difference? I have a good friend named Gary Kennedy, who was the first president of Oracle, who said that when he would accept assignments, opportunities, jobs, board positions, whatever he did, he would step back and always ask himself, if I get involved, am I the right person? Can I actually make a difference in what I'm trying to accomplish here? I think it's a great way to look at leadership and roles that you get involved in. So PDFs, you can think of the acronym for Adobe software, but this is not Adobe software. This is leadership called personal driving forces. What drives me? What compels me? What interests me to get involved in something? Whatever it is for the cause. Now, success factor 8, which is, I believe is the success factor that most people think of when they think of me, from the book called The Power of Strategic Influence. And the reason why I wrote my second book, my newest book called How to Become a Super Leader, The Four Essential Anchors for Mastering Influential Leadership. That's all about this success factor 8, which says identify and leverage your competencies. I want to just talk about competencies for a second, because competencies are something that are developed. They're not innate. They are things you learn and you acquire and you develop. So skill sets. Think of the skill sets you need to be in business. There's so many of them. I don't want to count them. I've done a survey that was involved in both of my books, right? I surveyed over 1,000 business leaders around the world, and I asked them one simple question, but others too. First question was, what are the characteristics or what are the competencies that a great leader possesses? And I got dozens and dozens of them. I narrowed it down to 40. And in my system, I teach you how to select the 13 that'll help you to become the leader that you really want to become. So I identify and I leverage competencies, which I later call competitive competencies, because they help you to become competitive as a leader. If you can help people solve problems through the skill sets you have, then you'll become a leader that's well sought after, that has influence, but also is competitive in their industry. So now down to the sixth sphere, the final sphere of my book, which is simply the objective we had in the beginning, and that is to become strategically influential. And that includes two things that make a difference, I think, in your life. And that is, one, to become a leader, you have to step in the center and you have to say, okay, I'm willing to help anyone with my expertise, which I believe is very good, for anyone that wants to be in my sphere of influence. It may only be one thing, or it could be multiple things, like Benjamin Franklin, who was a polymath, could do so many things so well. But it took him a lifetime to do that. So in the last success factor is giving back. So number 9 was become a center of influence, become a leader that can have value to other people. What's my personal value strategically is to do what I know I can do so well. And the last one is giving back. And I talk about this giving back in the very beginning of my book, saying, well, if you haven't arrived, if you don't have the wealth, if you don't have the earnings that that a rich person would have, where they could freely give away their money and help other people, you certainly have what you have inside, and that's your ability to help others. So if I'm really good at running a business, if I'm really good on an ethical basis, if I'm really good at marketing, whatever your skill sets are, then you have the ability to give back from the very beginning, and you should do that. In the end, you know, when you make a lot of money, and hopefully you might not, but you certainly know that all along the way you've been trying to help and give back. So those are the 10 success factors that are embedded within these six spheres. And it's really my life story, and it's something I've taught on my, you know, throughout my career.
Thank you. Tell us about your story of how you became a super leader.
Wow, thanks. I'm not sure that I would call myself a super leader, but I think I have the merits of some of those characteristics. So for me, I grew up in a family business. So my father was an entrepreneur. I never worked with my father where he hadn't just created everything by himself. He was a military officer who came out of the military and jumped into business. And for the rest of his life, he was his own boss. And I got to grow up in that business. For 20 years growing up, I did everything. He taught me at the beginning how to do just labor to keep our business premises clean. He created this business into a chain of retail businesses. I learned how to stock shelves, how to do accounting, how to do marketing, how to do advertising. Every year he gave me new assignments. And in the end, he let me manage one of his stores that I ultimately bought from him. his last store so he could retire. So I went to business school, and when I got out of business school, I wanted to get a graduate degree, an MBA from Northwestern. It was a school I selected. I actually got accepted to 7 schools, including Columbia, Wharton, other great schools. Northwestern for me was a pragmatic marketing case study kind of school, and it was exactly what I was looking for, and it turned out to be a fantastic experience. What I found when I got there is that my experience that I'd learned from my father and all the other businesses I'd worked with for the years I left his business, that it was valuable to the business school. And so they accepted me, many of them did, on the premise that I really knew what business was. I understood the operations of a business. I understood the marketing side of its sales. I really had a really well-rounded view of what a business was. And so they gave me the opportunity to waive my basic program in the first year of going to an MBA school and do electives from the first semester. So at the end of it, I got a 3-major MBA, and I was on the dean's list. I had a great experience. They were marketing, operations, and finance. So coming out with kind of a general manager kind of point of view because of those 3 majors, which helped me then jump into technology. I spent 20 years almost in high-tech software, where I rose very quickly because I'd been in sales previously. And so became VP of sales for several companies, which later became public or were public. So I worked for a company called Eloquent that became public. I was a VP of sales and became the worldwide VP of sales for that company. Did that again for about 20 years. And I got to the point where I realized that I knew there would be a day where I would leave the industry, I would leave corporate, and I would become my own entrepreneur like I was trained to be as a kid growing up in my father's business. By the way, my grandfather and my great-grandfather were all entrepreneurs, and that never worked for anyone except themselves. So my journey really started with those basics that my father taught me, getting an education that was really important to me to understand what general management and running a company was all about. Then leaving after 20 years to start my own business, that's where I started to get involved in lots of small startups. I was involved in 20 different businesses. Some of those I took on a role as a fractional VP of sales, for example, or I was just an advisor. 12 of those were my own businesses that I started or I acquired, then I built, I grew, and then I sold. That happened over about a 12-year period. Then I got involved in a company that I helped co-found, which is called Trustegrity. Trustegrity was a business professional networking company. In my book, if you go back to the beginning and when I talked about my success factors, I said at the beginning it has to involve people. It means you have to learn how to network. How do you learn how to network in a way that helps you and you help other people succeed? And that's by creating profiles of the type of people you think should be in your life, starting to connect with them. LinkedIn's a great forum for that. And then over time, the people you trust, those trusted partnerships you form, learning how to use those to help your company succeed and borrow strength from other people, and they would borrow strength from you. So it's a thing where we do exchanges. And then finally, this company, this networking company that I started, became national. And during COVID, I decided to sell it and decided to start writing books. And so that was a fun thing to do. I have a daughter and a granddaughter and my wife who were writing books. And I'd always wanted to write a book. I never had time to write a book, but they challenged me to get involved in a contest where you were supposed to write 50,000 words in 30 days. And I decided I didn't have anything to do at that time. It was the first time in my life I actually had free time to make a decision to do something like that. So over the next month, I did write a chapter that I thought was pretty good. Then I got involved with a guy that was a researcher. I sat down, I got serious about my book. I was going to call it something like The Power of Influence. And during the process of writing my book and all the things that I taught to thousands of salespeople over my lifetime, it became apparent to me that I wasn't just going to teach about influence. I was going to talk about strategic influence, which means relationships. It means connections and how you succeed by letting others know you can help them and they can help you. So that's really my journey. Today I'm writing books. I'm advising companies. I'm teaching about my books. I've been on a few boards and I've had a great experience. So that's where I'm at today.
Thank you. Tell us about how you implemented these 10 success factors into your personal life so that you could become a highly influential leader, starting with accountability and all the other different concepts you mentioned.
So I'm starting with this little brochure that shows the six spheres. So I like themes of nautical themes. So you'll see a ship's will. You'll see a ship where a man is on a ship or a woman. They get on the ship. The ship gets lost in a storm. They end up on an island they've never been to before. They have no connections there. They have nothing. This first question in my book, I interview top leaders. And the first question I always ask them in my interview is, what if you were on a ship that got stranded at a place where you knew no one, but it was a city, a bustling city with commerce, etc. You had no way to contact anyone from before. You had very little money in your pocket. You had, some clothing to last you for a day or two. What would you do? How would you survive? And every one of them gave me different answers, even though they were similar. One person told me I would do anything I had to do to survive. First thing I needed to do is get food and shelter. If I had to eat, food out of the garbage, I'd do it. This is a person that was making hundreds of millions of dollars. So for him to say that it was impressive to me. Other people said, well, okay, what they do an assessment. What do I know how to do? Let me go out and help people, do those things. If I'm good at something, even though I don't have access, to a lifeline, a phone or a bank account, how would I survive? I would start solving problems. I'd try to help people. I would make myself useful in the community I was in. So my success factors are all about this because I've had many instances in my life where I was kind of dropped into a city. Literally, I didn't know, I had no contacts, and I had to survive selling some products. A company I worked for 10 years, and then I became their VP of sales before I left, and then went on to high tech, as you know. They would have us create teams. And the day before we would leave to conquer, to sell, to succeed, they would tell us where we're going to go. We had no idea. We didn't have preparation to find an apartment. We had no idea who we're going to contact. We, as a team, and I was a team leader. First of all, I was a team member, then a team leader, then I was a regional team leader. I got to take this team having full confidence that I could go into a city or a region. I could map it out. I could organize our territories. And then we could start having meetings and helping each other to succeed. Every single one of those experiences I was in succeeded. We all made good money. We all served the communities we were in. And it was a very, very helpful experience for me to know that success is about your mindset. It's about your survival mindset. It's not about resources initially. Resources will help you later to extend, to expand and accelerate, but they don't help you succeed necessarily. So my 10 success factors, it's progressive, starts with perspective, goes accountability, you're developing relationships, you become a leader, you look at the opportunities, you develop your skill sets, and then you give back. I mean, that's what I've learned. It's my teachings and learning a lot of those things from people like Stephen Covey along the way.
Thank you. Tell us about fear and overcoming it, because to be a great leader, you need to be somewhat courageous in the face of a lot of different obstacles, because some people will take the same situation and some will freeze in the face of a really big obstacle. Others will not, will perhaps take some limited action, and others will courageously find a solution relatively quickly. What differentiates those that manage to overcome that situation and come out thriving and perhaps make hundreds of millions of dollars from that particular problem that they encountered themselves and turn it into a solution for hundreds of thousands of other people, and those who freeze in the face of a massive obstacle?
Well, I have a few concepts that are going to be in new books in the future. One of them is to create early victories. So for me, fear happens when you are stalemate, when you stop, you hesitate. Even if you know you're going to make mistakes, it's really important you don't stop. If you begin a project, you begin a journey, it's important to not stop. And the more you make mistakes, the sooner you make mistakes, the more you're going to learn how to not and repeat those mistakes going forward. The experience I told you about going to a new city, a new area where we'd never been before. We had no contacts. There was a lot of fear built in there, especially for the new people. I tried to select people that had experiences where they had overcome fear. or they've been in athletics, and so they had to deal with, resistance, that kind of thing. Those kinds of people accept fear better, I think, sometimes than those who haven't had those experiences. So getting into it, you say, okay, I'm going to lay out a plan. Don't get fearful. Don't worry about it. Create a plan, even if it's not going to be perfect. Create what I call an early victory. Try to have a small success, just learning how to get started and then build upon that every single day. Benjamin Franklin, who is a favorite person of study for me and throughout my lifetime, and is a kind of a big part of my second book, Becoming a Super Leader, when he was only 20 years old, decided to identify those things that were holding him back. He called them virtues that he lacked. He lacked in these 13 virtues that he wrote down and said, I'm going to practice these one at a time for an entire week, and I'm going to go through this cycle every year 4 times, and I'm going to do it for the rest of my life. Well, first of all, the man in the 1700s, that was been almost 300 years since he was here, lived to be 84 years old when people were only living to be mid-30s. So he took everything seriously, his health, his relationships, his ability to become an inventor, a publisher. He's a polymath, as I mentioned. He learned how to overcome fear by doing. And doing will get you busy. It'll get your mind off the fear, and it'll help you to see what you're dealing with, the mistakes you're making, and to repetitively try to overcome them so that you can perfect them, but get mature at the process, and then to become an expert at it if possible. So my dealing with fear is, look fear in the eye. Accept up front that you can be a survivor. So no matter what happens, what's the worst could happen to me? Okay, I might not have a place to sleep, but I'm going to work hard that doesn't happen very many times, and I'm going to get to a situation where I'm very comfortable, secure, and safe. From there, once you have that down, you look, okay, now I'm going to develop relationships. How do I do that? Offering to help people, even if they don't pay you. Okay, that takes the fear away because people then see that you're helping them, they'll want to help you back. So in a very short amount of time, you can take that fear and you can turn it into something constructive where people see you as someone with value. And then ultimately, yes, if you get into a situation where it's totally unexpected and it's life-threatening, I don't know how everybody responds or reacts to that. I think at the moment, because you didn't expect it, you're going to do things to just survive, to just protect yourself and try to get into a more stable situation again. I've been watching these mountain climbers and what they do to go up, the solo acts, where they don't have ropes or anything. That would scare me to death. I don't know how they do that, but somehow some of them are so confident that they can go into situations where it's life-threatening every step and they survive somehow. So I think it's about confronting your fears and then developing actions to help you overcome them.
Thank you. How can a traumatized person become a leader? Imagine someone who had a very unsupportive family, or who was beaten a lot, or who had like a husband that was beating them, or someone who was continuously told, you're not good enough, and you're stupid, and you're never gonna make it, and all these different unsupportive statements. And let's say at any opportunity that this person had to kind of progress, they were put down in some way. What can a person like that do to become a super leader?
I think that's tough. I've met, by the way, several people that grew up in circumstances like that. Luckily, I didn't. My father taught me, mentored me. My mother loved me, helped me learn how to develop relationships. I came from a great environment, and I have to, admit that because it was a wonderful experience growing up. But I have friends that didn't grow up like that, that were abused, that had issues, that didn't get, that were poor, that their only meal of the day was at school if they got that. My mother though taught me, I'd have to tell you, and I'm not going to get emotional here because I could. My mother always taught me to be kind to people, and no matter their circumstances. And so thankfully, my mother, because of her, my dad was mentoring me on a business side. My mother was teaching me about life. Taught me that if you see people in need, you should stop. You should recognize, you should acknowledge them, not ignore them. If someone's poor, they have poor clothing on, you shouldn't think poorly about them. You shouldn't look down upon them. You should see if you can do something to help them. And I have friends that I've helped a lot, and I've seen people that are on the streets that have nothing, and I will give up my food. If I just bought food and I walked out of a restaurant and I see someone really in need, I'll just give them what I have. And I don't do that every day because I'm not always in that circumstance, but I've done it many times. And it's been not only makes you feel good, but it makes you know that you helped a person maybe last one more day before they could find help. The person that's in that situation, I think, may not understand that it's okay to ask for help. And they may hesitate to ask for help because they might think that someone would, say something that was cruel to them. But I think the sooner you step out of your this circle of being downtrodden, of feeling like you have no purpose or that you have no opportunity or you're not going to survive, you have to stop out of that and find somehow get into a circle where people talk differently. It's about the mindset. It's about the way people talk, and those people help each other. And they all started out with nothing, and they're helping each other because their mindset's differently, or they came from a family where they at least got a start, at least got helped to get into school, etc. But I think they have to ask for help. And if you get desperate enough, I mean, when I was 10 years old, my dad took me to a circus. And while we were trying to get in there because of the crowds, somehow he lost me. I lost him. And I was fearful for my life as a 10-year-old because there were thousands of people surrounding me and they were all twice or more, taller than I was. And I it immediately went to a policeman. I saw a police officer. I said, "I'm lost." I said, "I need to find my dad." The officer took me to the center where the management were at. They had it was just an intercom. I guess they spoke on, like, there wasn't a megaphone. They announced that there was a boy, 10-year-old, that was lost, and his father, Mr. George Laney, if he could please approach. So that got solved very easily, but I learned that you have to ask for help if you're in trouble. And the sooner you do, there's going to be good people. Not everybody will do it, but there's going to be someone good that's going to reach out and lend a helping hand and help you get out of that situation. If you take it seriously, you don't just take their help for granted and you ask that person, "What can I do for you?" Even if you don't get paid for it, "What can I do to help you? You did a nice thing for me. Let me help you." Those kinds of actions will help people and motivate them, inspire them to want to help you more and get you in the right thing. So I've never been in that situation, except I've been in tough, challenging situations, like I talked about, where I go places and I need everything. But I think those people have, there's too many of those people in the world, and I think there's so many of us that can help. I have a little group that I created in LinkedIn called the Influential Hero Group. So meaning that if you have substance and you have abilities, you should continuously be looking to help other people. Because you might just save someone's life by doing something to give them food, to give them, shelter, helping them go to the right direction, know who to talk to. So influence heroes are those people like us that want to, help others succeed. And I think it's important that we do that.
Thank you. How can you become a super leader as a people pleaser with no boundaries?
Okay, you a super leader, and what was the second one?
So, how can you become a super leader if you are
Yeah.
currently a people pleaser with no
Okay.
boundaries?
Well, boundaries to me are restrictive. And I guess I think of boundaries differently than some people. People want to put boundaries on relationships. I think you have to be kind. I think your mindset should be that I want to be helpful, useful, giving. I don't want to restrict people around me. Unless they're trying to attack me, then I have to seek shelter, seek help. But if you don't have any boundaries, I think you need to set at least some objectives, at least some goals that lets you know, well, I can't do everything. I would like to have endless boundaries or non-boundaries, no boundaries. But you have to have some kind of discipline. And discipline means, okay, I'm going to sleep every night. I'm not going to stay up all night. If I do that too many nights, I'm going to be in trouble and get sick. I can't hold down four different jobs. I have to do one job and do it really well. You might have to do two if you're really desperate, but I have to do what I do well and not to try to please the world. People pleasers aren't useful, I don't think, if they don't give true feedback, if they don't give constructive feedback. If all I want to do is tell everybody they're great, and everything you're doing is wonderful, they're going to know that I'm not telling the truth and I'm just trying to, make them like me. I don't necessarily need to be liked more than I need to know that I'm useful. And so I think if I was like that, I would seek help and say, what are the things you think I need to work on? What things do I are assets for me and what things do I need to work on. And those should be the things I start working on because people see that in me. If others see it, I should see it. And sometimes we don't see the things that are holding us back. You know, we have this compelling idea that we should just do lots of things, but you got to have some discipline, you've got to have a plan, and you've got to be a person that is goal oriented. So I don't know. That's a hard one.
So. Thank you. What about people who over deliver? Imagine you bought a product for £10 and that person gives you £10,000 worth of product because they have the inability to have like boundaries around what they actually deliver to you because they just want to make sure that you're happy. Now, I know it sounds like a ridiculous example, but people pleasers are like this.
Well, I think some parents are like that. You know, I see a lot of problems in families sometimes where the parents become very successful, very rich, and they do nothing but hand out money to their kids. The kids don't have to earn it. The parents want to make them happy. I love you. I want to give you this. And they continue to do it without any requirement back from the child. In a business, it could be the same kind of thing initially, I guess. But I think that, you know, wants to succeed, has to know that they have to earn their way through life. If they don't have a sense that they've accomplished something because they had to put out some effort, then they're not going to value it and they'll just expect more and more and more. I think that's a bad situation to be in. So, for example, I had somebody that helped me recently, with a project and I didn't think that I think they didn't charge me enough. They gave me more value than I was giving them. And so I asked, I said, I'm going to give you more. And so, and I really appreciate you. Didn't I just gave more? I didn't even, you know, try to negotiate it. Another person that I tried to get more to wouldn't take it. He says that was what he wanted and he was happy with it. And I just bent over backwards to make him know that I really appreciated him, that I would hire him in the future. I would refer him in the future. I would find some way, you know, to make him, receive the value I perceived that he provided me.
Thank you. What's the most, what are the, some of the most highly influential leaders that you have impacted as a result of your work with your book and your coaching?
Well, so I started out as a lowly, you know, worker, like in my dad's store. I didn't really have any influence. I really wasn't a leader in any sense, but I guess in a sense, because I was in athletics, I was a good influence on a lot of people and people told me that. And so I liked hearing that. And so I wanted to help more people because I saw the good that it was doing. I have, helped a lot of people in sales and business development become to establish a foundation that would help them to become successful. I wouldn't always take credit for the success that other people have, but I certainly have influenced people to know that here's the groundwork. Here's the foundation. Here's what you need. Let me work with you. Let us work together. And then I want to help you shine. I want to help you succeed. Because if you succeed, I succeed and I don't have to get all the credit. In my most recent article, I state a quote that says, pass the credit and take the blame. It means leaders should not always take the credit, but they should step in when there's a problem and there's an issue and take responsibility for that. So, you know, I've helped a lot of people to get that sense of responsibility, that mindset of responsibility, the competitive element of doing your best and working hard and earning what you get. I've done that for thousands of people. And I've spoken to tens of thousands of people in seminars, etc. And I think what they get out of me is that I'm authentic. I don't expect things that I shouldn't get, that my plan is progressive. It's a process that if you work on it and you follow the process, you know, continue to improve it, there's no chance you won't be successful. And I've helped a lot of people have that perspective. And I think my books, I do the same thing. And by the way, the people that I talked about, so my first book about strategic influence, there are 12 people that I interviewed. I never went into those interviews thinking I was going to teach them, even though I did teach many of them, the principles of my book. I went into the interview thinking, what can I learn from them? Tom Ziegler was one person that I interviewed who was the son of the great Zig Ziegler. And I learned from him, I have to tell you, that the reason he loved his dad so much is because his dad gave it all to everyone he ever presented to. He said he'd given a talk that was a popular talk 100 times. If he was given 101 101st opportunity to give that talk, he didn't just go in and give a presentation. He would spend days still preparing because he wanted to give something that was customized for this topic to the customer that he had. So I was really impressed with the things I learned from the people that I engaged with. I will teach anyone that wants to receive my teachings. I don't have to always get money for it. Like today, I mean, I'm glad to be here. I'm thankful that you invited me. Thank you so much. And this discussion, these questions you're facilitating have been really mind blowing a little bit, because I don't have any notes in front of me. I didn't know what you're going to ask me. And so for me, it's a good experience because it helps me to go back into my memory and not just look at a cheat sheet where I'm going to tell you what I think I should be talking about.
Thank you. How can a perfectionist become a super leader?
Well, perfectionist, I think, misses out. Listen, I think anyone who's very successful is a perfectionist in some degree because they want to do things well. Once you get into a habit of doing things well, it becomes a little bit of a passion where you want to continue to do well. Perfectionists can be a negative if you are trying to make everyone else feel like they have to do it your way. I think that's the negative part of a perfectionist. To me, a perfectionist, I'm going to equate it to becoming a super leader or a master, someone who is an expert at something where they can help others. I'm not going to come in and try to tell you to stop doing it the way you feel most comfortable. I'm going to try to tell you that there is a process you should follow to find out the best way for you so you can succeed, because personalities matter. People have different skill sets and people do things differently to succeed in almost the same way sometimes. So perfectionists, I think, if it's on a positive level, mean they're trying to help someone perfect their skill, like an athlete that wants to get a gold medal, that wants to go to the Olympics, and they can't do that unless they almost perfect it so they don't fall, so they don't stumble. Some of those exercises they do are mere perfection. And if someone comes to them to be taught by them, they're going to help them with their body, with their skill sets, with their mindset to learn how to do something hopefully equivalent, but not the same way they did. I don't think you have to throw somebody under the bus because they don't do it your way. I really don't think that is necessary.
Thank you. How can someone overcome the inner critic, the inner voice that tells them they're not good enough, or whatever they earned this month is good enough?
Wow. Well, give me a little bit more data, just a little more.
So let's say, I think we all have an inner critic. And what I find quite fascinating is that, for example, there are some presidents that, you know, if you look at certain things they do, they, you know, and how many millions of people talk really badly about them, I think their inner critic is kind of like on a very low kind of or mute voice, you know, like I don't think they hear it because they continue and they show up every day and they do great things. Whereas, let's say there's other people that play on a much smaller level, and their inner critic is so big and the voice is like so loud that they could do something smaller and still feel really bad if, let's say, something doesn't turn out perfect, or if they didn't live up to their expectations, or they didn't win a certain game if they're a sports person, or if they didn't perform, you know, as a musician, and maybe they weren't fully booked, or, you know, if they weren't fully booked as an author, or if they didn't sell gazillion books as an author or whatever, you know? So how does someone quiet the inner critic so that they become more like the kind of super leaders that are somehow or appear to be, to quiet this inner critic so much so that they don't appear to hear it, even if millions of people say, oh, you're a crap person, or you're a crap leader, or you did this, or you didn't pay these people, or I don't know. There's like so many bad articles written about certain people. They don't seem to care. Why do other people care so much about that?
Well, so I'm going to distinguish between my two books to begin with, okay? My first book is about how to become strategic about your relationships. Really, that's the end. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to become the best of the best in the world at anything. It means you're on a journey, and during that journey, you're going to become happy and joyful to a certain point where you're happy to be the center influence of this little team that you manage every day of four people. Somebody else wants to manage, you know, something global, like Elon Musk or a president of a nation or something. My second book, though, I have to tell you, So this book is for everyone. This book is not for everyone. This book is for those who don't want to accept status quo as sufficient. They know they have the ability. They know they have the potential. They have the drive and they want to become the best of the best in something, not everything, sport, business, break records. And I cheer these people on because it allows them to know that they, at the end of their life, they can think back and say, wow, I really gave it all I had. The other people might think that there's more to it and it's more balanced through their approach. And so both books go hand in hand, but I think it really boils down to what I call a personal best. So when I was in sports, I liked this concept I heard one day where someone said, was that your personal best? And I didn't win the race. I took like third. And I go, well, I didn't win the race. But I think it was my best time. So maybe you're right. So is that what a personal best means? Yeah, that was your best time ever. And a year ago, you were at this time, this year at this time, and you took third, you didn't take fifth. It's your personal best. You didn't win the race, but you're progressing. You should be happy about the state you're in because you actually accomplished something you couldn't do a year ago. And if you continue on that track, who knows what your limit is? I've seen people that started out way back at the end of the line, and years later, you find out they are top notch. They are the very best. And the reason they were able to do that because they didn't give up. They were consistent. They weren't beating themselves up because they weren't accomplishing something fast enough. They were happy with the accomplishment they were at, but they were always working at it. So I think that personal best concept is kind of a cool concept where, you don't have to go out and say, you're a loser. You took second. I'm the winner. And there was a fraction of a second between them. I don't think that's is how people should look at things. I think it's your personal best. I think it's your ability to progress. And then really, again, how do you help other people do that? Because if we're all on a progressive track, we're all going to end up somewhere we're going to be very happy at someday. Doesn't have to be today.
Thank you. And how do you actually cope with it? Imagine you already have a voice in your head that says, oh, you're not good enough, you're stupid, you're not gorgeous enough to work for this company. I don't know, lots of different not good enough kind of statements about yourself. You already have those, let's say, entrenched in your mindset. How do you get rid of that so you become this super leader that excels in a certain field and makes hundreds of millions of dollars, or excels in that particular field so much that you become proud of yourself and don't kind of like, how do you quiet that inner voice? How did you do it, for example?
Well, I'll tell you. So when I was growing up, I had aspirations of being a great athlete, and I joined a basketball team, and I was very short. I'm taller now, but back then I didn't realize that even though I had, aspirations to become a basketball star when I was, 10 or 11 years old, I really didn't have the potential, and I probably should try something else. And so luckily I had people around me that geared me, steered me in a direction where they thought I could be more successful. And so you don't have to be stuck in this rut where you're always saying, no, I'm going to get there. I know I'm going to do it someday, but you just don't have the physical attributes, or you don't have the mental capacity, or you don't have the background or the experience or the resources, whatever it is. I think you have to, at some point, be honest with yourself and say, of these 40 things that I could do, which ones could I do really well? I mean, is there one thing on here that I think I could do as good or better than anybody else? Maybe there's two things. But you shouldn't pick something willy-nilly, out of the sky and say, I'm going to take that, I'm going to be the best at it, without realizing at some point that you actually have some ability and some talent and some potential in that. So that's how I look at it. I mean, that basketball story was something I finally stopped doing basketball. I was geared into wrestling and track and football. And football, I was still small, and so that I got injured and I had to quit that. But I did wrestling and track, and I became a national recognized wrestler when I was, 18 years old. Never thought that would be possible. But guess what? It didn't happen until after I had met and been trained by the master himself. His name was Dan Gable, one of the most prolific, greatest wrestlers of all time. I had the opportunity, the pleasure to be his guide in this camp I was in long ago when I was in high school. And then to be taught by him for 4 days, just 4 days, Lily. In 4 days, I went from an average wrestler. I was very strong, so that wasn't the problem. But I didn't have the skill set because my coach didn't know wrestling. He didn't know the techniques. And so being with the best, I learned that I had a lot more potential than I thought. And I always felt like I could do better. And in 4 days, I became undefeated for the whole next year and became and was ranked nationally. So that would never have happened had I not had someone be willing to spend time with me who had the expertise that I would dream of to help me become much better at it. So that's one story I like to tell because I think sometimes we just have this mask on. We don't see the potential. We don't see where it could go, and we don't have the encouragement. But I think you could.
Thank you. How can an entrepreneur cope with massive failure, financial failure, for example, where they have had to perhaps lay off some staff and have lost so much money that perhaps even close the business or have suffered so many financial losses that they cannot continue with that particular business and have to reinvent themselves and in the process perhaps disappoint hundreds of customers because of their inability to deliver certain services that were promised to them or, especially I think the reputational part. I think you can get up from a lot of different things, but I find that disappointing customers and having really bad reviews can like hurt you forever. And I don't even know if you can kind of get back up from that. So I'm wondering what's your opinion on how can a leader continue and become a super leader in the face of massive financial failure?
Well, you don't give up. I think your tendency would be, I'm quitting and I'm doing something else. I don't know what that is, and you just give up. A lot of people do that. I mean, 80% of the businesses that are started fail within the first 5 years. 80%. So you have to think, okay, entrepreneur is not for everybody, entrepreneurship. And I've been an entrepreneur. I've been involved in 20 different businesses. I grew up in an entrepreneurial family. I have succeeded in not all of them, but in a few of them really, really well, which helped me to gain my success. I have friends that are great speakers. For example, I have a friend named Marcus Ogden. I don't know if you've heard that name before. He was an NFL, so he was good enough in college to get on in the NFL. He was in it for like 6 or 7 years, I believe. And then he left the NFL, I guess, when he had retired and started a contracting business, which was a complete failure. I mean, he put hundreds of thousands of dollars into it and it was doing well, but he didn't manage it because he didn't have the background or the experience or the team. And he lost all his money. He basically went bankrupt and he had to take a job like $20 an hour after being paid, millions in the NFL for those years that he was involved. That was not easy for him. Marcus is just one person I know about, but he did not give up. He decided, I'm going to keep doing whatever I have to do, whatever job I have to do to put, food on the table. And then I'm going to try to go out and speak on failure that became success. And at the time, he really hadn't become a success yet, except in the NFL. So 10 years ago, he was really struggling in his speaking, trying to get engagements, trying to get paid for his speaking. He would go anywhere if they give him $100 just so he'd get the experience. Well, today he's considered one of the top five, I think, business speakers in the if you looked at him 10 years ago and today, it's a complete different person of confidence, of experience. He doesn't even have to market very much because people refer him. He's always busy, he's very successful and is doing extremely well. But he went from and hit and his marquee, talk. His main talk is that he went from success to failure and got back into success. David Meltzer is another person who lost like $150 million and then got it back. I mean, that it's not easy to lose everything you have and then get it back. It's not easy. So it's staying focused, keep trying things like Thomas Edison, who tried 999 times to invent the light bulb and finally got it right on the 1,000th time. 1,000 times. Most people quit after 2 or 3 times. And there's so many people like that. I've got another friend that I work for who was my boss, who made millions and millions of dollars, and then started a sporting goods store and it flopped. He lost everything, had to come back in, get a job. So, I mean, I could spend all day telling you about people I know that have done that. The key is to not get, don't give up. You might get discouraged, but don't give up and realize that you can survive and to try something new if you need to, but get yourself in a stable position And then start working at something that you think can become great, that you're excited about, you're passionate about. You can't stop because it's something you really believe in. So I don't know. That's what I would say.
Thank you. Tell us where entrepreneurs can connect with you.
Well, LinkedIn. I've been talking about that. So I go to Gary C. Laney on LinkedIn. I think we just put in Gary Laney. There's not too many of us, maybe only two. And you'll find me because I speak about influence. I've written books and I have an entrepreneurial kind of background. You can also go to GaryCLaney.com or GaryLaney.com. You can go to where my book, I have a website for this book called The Power of Strategic Influence. It has my speaker reel. It has my background. It has people that endorse me. You can go to Amazon and look up both books. That's easy to do that. Just put in Gary Laney in the search bar. It'll bring up my books. And you can also email me at info@successmasters.com. That's plural at the end. info@successmasters.com. Happy to engage with anybody, and it's been a pleasure to be here with you today.
Follow us for more interviews with world's most influential business titans, providing you with the insights to awaken to your full potential so you can get paid to be yourself, find true happiness, and manifest anything you desire.